Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning to you,
Adam White.
Good morning, Daniel. Gee, lots to get through today.
Busy day. So much has
happened since we last spoke, and looking forward to it.
Oh, we'll also touch base, well, not touch base, but reflect on game four of the one-day series in England for the Australian cricket team, who went down overnight.
It's just finished, yeah.
Went down overnight just recently. Again, 4-0. They've been swept in the one-day series. Not a fantastic result, but they're pretty good, the English cricket team, and they'd be firm favourites for the World Cup next year. Adam Ramanauskas is back. Second day in a row after a couple of weeks on holiday. How are you feeling, Rama? Good morning.
No, feeling fine, actually.
Sure. So, sounding a bit nasally.
No jet lag for me.
So righto.
I've actually been a crook for a couple of weeks now, so... feeling pretty good, but geez, it was a really good night in one sense with Essendon winning, but geez, it was a really just a little bit flattening about midnight when we we dominated play
and a little bit flattening.
We created chances and why didn't we bring Tim Cahill on for that last 15 minutes? I just couldn't quite work that out. And
what was the score?
I didn't catch up with it.
What happened?
Well. You can learn a bit more about it through Aussie coach Bert van Marwijk, who was talking about the game afterwards, after the 1-1 draw, Adam, with Denmark.
The disappointment is after two games, we should have had 4 points. And we deserved it. We played very well against the number 12 of the world, so we can be proud again. And we didn't lose, but we had chances also to win.
Did have chances to win. They did play very well against the number 12 in the world, but they couldn't find a way, Rama, to hit the back of the net in general play. And this is the concern we've got at the moment. We'll hopefully touch base with Frank over there in Samoa and find out more from his perspective. But in the last, what's the last five international games, they're not a friendly, like it's meant something, either the qualifiers or the World Cups themselves, we haven't scored a goal in general play.
No.
We've scored five goals, all penalties, or a free kick from Mille Jednak. He scored all five.
Yeah.
There's no way we can hit the back of the net in general play. We've got to find a way to score, mate.
But I think last night, at last check, I think there was 11 shots on goal to 3. And there was some really clear opportunities through that time for the Aussies. But we do lack that world-class striker.
Yep.
Obviously, when Tim was at his very, very best, he was that. But He's not that anymore because of age, but yeah, it was really disappointing because we leaked the goal early through Ericsson, which was an absolute cracking strike.
It was a cracker.
Oh, it was a cracking strike, and you thought
another Tottenham Hotspur player.
Oh, now he's got interest.
Oh, now he wants to play, doesn't he?
Talk about it.
Are you waking up? Are you in?
I'm just listening. I'm learning. I'm just taking it all in.
But
last time I checked, you have to score goals to win.
Wow. That's true.
Yeah. And you get what you deserve.
Oh, there's no doubt about that in sport. You get what you deserve.
I just can't handle that. Oh, we should have 4 points. We should have won this. We deserve to win. No. You deserve to win when you get the ball in the net.
Why do you hate the Socceroos?
I hate that sort of talk. That's all.
Well, there was another team across in Perth that did kick goals early in the game, and that really set up the game for the Bombers last night. 6-0 in that first quarter, Whitey, which was a
helpful way to start.
Dominant performance. Now, Essendon were allowed to not defend at all last night. West Coast was, I'm not sure what they were thinking at times with their ball movement going inside forward 50, but Essendon needed to be applauded. They took the game on early, and West Coast could not catch them.
They got shot by a tranquilizer gun last night, every single West Coast Eagles player before the game.
That was the dumbest style of football I've seen in years, watching West Coast play last night. The Bombers are awesome, just by the way. But the way West Coast attacked, their entries inside their forward half were horrific. Horrific.
Yeah. And
didn't have any other way to get it in there, just bomb it in.
But like we spoke about yesterday, like the stat you mentioned yesterday, the first time West Coast haven't played without Darling or Kennedy in a very, very long time.
So that was
clearly evident. Now, the only West Coast forward that Essendon needed to defend was Mark Lacroix, and they were able to do that.
Look, I agree with what Half said and what you're saying as well about the forward line entries, but the key with West Coast was just the lack of intensity, the lack of urgency, the lack of will to want to run. The Eagles were just insipid in the way that they allowed Essendon just to do what Essendon likes to do. And I think we all know that if Essendon aren't able to do what they'd like to do, they're pretty ordinary.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So,
and you look at it now, we'll talk to obviously half to Boomer about this after 7 o'clock, but Essendon have now had 6 wins. Mm. 5 of those wins have come against teams currently inside the top 11. So you've got West Coast, who are second, or they've now dropped to third after losing last night. Geelong.
It's a big loss for them last night.
Yeah. Geelong, Port Adelaide, GWS and Adelaide, and 2 of those 5 have been interstate. They're 5 of their 6 wins. So had they beaten Carlton and the Western Bulldogs, Essendon would be 8-5. Now, I know they didn't.
Now, this is you, Bert Van Marwijk.
And I'm saying I've got no sympathy for them because they weren't good enough to win those games. But it's almost a frustrating result last night because it shows what Essendon is actually capable of doing and how I think they've wasted a season.
They've got a nice little run coming up now, Essendon. So I think they've got games against Western Bulldogs, maybe.
They've got North Melbourne, Collingwood.
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast.
Not exactly easy, though. Fremantle. Next two.
No, yeah, that's the next four. But what they can do is that they can sort of start to pave their own way a little bit, because if they beat Collingwood and North Melbourne, who are ahead of them, they all become 8-point games. So that it puts themselves back in the conversation if they can beat those teams. If they can't, they're not good enough, and you know they've got given themselves too much work to do, which I think is the case.
Yes, it's going to be a big challenge, but if they play like that, and allowed to play like that for the rest of the season, they'll be a very, very damaging team in the back half of the season. But the West Coast Eagles, what the hell happened? Why would they just continue to bomb the ball to outnumbers all night long and just not put no pressure on in that forward half of the ground?
Well, we hear Rocket Ead talk about how even the competition is, and that this mental preparation is more important than ever before, that you just can't be 10% off because you'll get beaten.
Yeah, but that's what you're talking about, half. That's a natural reflex for them. That's how...
You have to be able to, but any team has to be able to adapt in any given circumstance, any game day. And there's always, we hear all this time that we train different scenarios and all that sort of stuff. And once you're a quarter in, or probably midway through the second term, and Adam Simpson's seen that there's actually getting no reward for the way that they're entering their forward half of the ground, surely you're sitting there going, righto, boys, in the coach's box. Mm. Righto, boys, got to find another way here. Everything's bomb. Back over the top to all their numbers. Let's got to find a way to hit up and just draw the defenders out of the space a bit, own the ball a bit, going in the forward half. But nah, just bomb it in. Just watch it get rolled out again.
The other area where Essendon need credit is their tackling pressure has been immense over the last couple of weeks. That's been a real shift, I feel, in their game. Even against Brisbane, where they weren't playing well, their pressure was still really, really high. So... that's credit, and you know that's led by Devin Smith.
Yeah, oh, he's fantastic.
He's just been absolutely brilliant in that area this year, and got reward on the scoreboard last night, kicking 3 goals.
He's fantastic, Devin Smith. He's been.
I didn't think he was that type of player.
No, well, I don't think anyone did.
He's really surprised me with, you know, being able to do that and do that consistently. I think so. You know, he sets the bar for that tackling defensive pressure at Essendon.
There's been a lot of criticism thrown at Essendon for recruiting Saad, Smith and Stringer as a collective. The three of them were all very, very good. I mean, Stringer kicked 3 goals in the first quarter and kind of set it up. But so did Saad with his run, and Smith was good all night. So I just don't understand how West Coast allowed Essendon to just own the corridor like that. It made no sense watching that. For a team that had just been unstoppable for 2 months, it was just bizarre. And you knew after Essendon kicked their first two, West Coast aren't coming back from here.
There were circumstances, though, were playing against West Coast. Two key forwards out. Yeah, Sydney the week before, 6-day break. So there were some circumstances you can go, okay, here's a couple of excuses. But
they're structural things.
Let's not better.
And even worse, talking about why you're talking about the Bombers lost to the Bulldogs and the Blues, even worse, it's the type of loss that could cost them a top two spot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.
That's the problem for them on the back of that. Not so much, you know, they were rubbish, as you say, but they played poorly. But it's what it could mean in the grand scheme of things for a premiership tilt. That's the problem from their perspective.
This is a good text here. Kennedy and Darling's replacements were Dean Margetts and Nathan Williamson.
Oh, no, that's not very nice. 33-17.
Margetts, he was taking things to whole new levels last night.
I must admit there were some odd ones last night, but there was also lots of ones that were there that would have assisted the free kick count in favour of the home team as well. But there were some odd ones, I'll give you that. Last night, won all the Socceroos with Denmark at Samara in the World Cup, the second game of their group stage in the World Cup. Not an outstanding result, but gee, it was close to an outstanding performance. And this update, the World Cup Soccer Report, thanks to the TAB. Check out the Aussie Futures offer and get more to celebrate when the Aussies score. Well, they did it once last night. Jeez, I wish they had done it twice. And Francis Leach is there on tour with us, and he's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, half, Rammer, Whitey. Yes, just sitting here with a gin and tonic, just trying to absorb what went on earlier today. And we are so close to sitting from the cup of success, but we just can't find a goal in open play. And that's a frustrating thing, because particularly that last 10 minutes when they were pressing and Kasper Schmeichel was brilliant in the Danish style, but we're clearly finishing the better of the two teams, clearly the fitter of the two teams, but we just didn't have that cutting edge that Christian Eriksen showed us in the first 10 minutes. And that was a beautiful goal, too, by the way. Matt Lyon's reaction time is as good as it's going to be from that distance. But, you know, another outstanding performance that just didn't have the cutting edge that might have given us 3 points.
Yeah, we touched on that before, Ramon and I were talking about that before, but it was frustrating from the couch, I've got to tell you, because after pretty much the first 25 minutes, it was all Australia, it was all the Socceroos, Frank, and we, as you say, we just couldn't find that clinical finish or that piece of luck either in the second half of the contest. What was it like being there and knowing that there was such dominance but not being able to hit the scoreboard?
The only thing I can relate to, Ramon's played in AFL Grand Final, but he's like, you know, as a fan, it's like having 3 grand finals in the space of 20 days. Because particularly in the second round, when you know if you lose, you're out, the intensity is really quite extreme. And when the game on a knife edge, you know, right up until the very end, as the time ticks away, it becomes more and more intense. And I think you're right there. A little bit of luck. Nothing's kind of broken our way. You know, we haven't had an opportunity to sort of pinch a goal that maybe we don't quite deserve. It might have changed the course of events, but it was fantastic to watch them play. And today was Matthew Leckie's day. I mean, he was the one. If Aaron Moy was the star of the first performance, Leckie on the right hand side was prepared to run at his defenders and get in behind. And, you know, concede his time at Herderville in the Bundesliga. He's not intimidated by the stage, and I'm really proud to see him emerge as a top class player. I mean, he didn't start playing soccer or football until he was about 15. Wayne Garratta is an Aussie Wolves player before that. And initially, when he first came into the side, there was a thought that, yes, he was very powerful and could run really quickly, but he didn't get his head up enough in time to actually pick a pass. That's all changed now, and he looks a really, really dangerous player.
So, Frank, tactically, is Bert Vermaak pulling the right tactical reins at the moment? We're dominating play, we're creating opportunities, but our finishing is just simply not there. What else? What's in the tool shed? What else can happen against Peru in the next game to go, we need finishes because we've simply got to score in the next game?
Yeah, we do. I think we get a sense from the Dutch that, and we've got this with Hiddink as well, that they're pretty set in their ways. I think the fact that he started the same 11 as what was sent out there in the first game suggests that he knows his guys. And clearly prefers. But that's been changed now because Andrew Nabuch's shoulder injury means that he's out for the third game and for the remainder of the tournament. Juric came in. I thought he did okay. He's probably likely to start. And, he scored a lot of goals in Europe at his Austrian club. So you hope that maybe his time will come. They've got to keep trying. Look, it's not going to be Tim Cahill, I doubt. I just don't think. Vermaak, I think, has been smart in that. He's taken Cahill there as a mentor and a senior player in the squad. But if, I think in any other circumstances, given the great sentiment around Cahill, and let's be brutally honest, the commercial value that's been placed on him, I mean, the whole Caltex campaign is based around him. You had to take him. You can't have that the Football Australia signing a deal with Caltex and leaving Tim Cahill behind. Let's be really honest about it. I don't think he ever intended to play him. And he's brought Daniel Arzani on twice and believes that kid has a bit of X factor and he might be able to produce something special. A couple of moments today where he probably, the impetuosity of youth meant that he tried to take on the Danish defenceman, maybe a pass left or right might have made the difference, but I don't think anyone's going to point the finger at him. We'd rather see him take the game on and dare to be brilliant. So maybe we're hoping that his moment will come in this third and final group game. Peru will certainly be attacking, and they've been unlucky. I thought unlucky today too. They hit the crossbar a couple of times and looked dangerous against the French. But it's going to be a rollicking game, that one, because both teams are going to go out and try and win it.
So tell us the scenarios that have to play out now for the Aussies to progress. Obviously, France are through with the 1-0 victory last night. What's the scenario that has to play out for the Socceroos to progress?
So if the French do beat the Danes, then they will be on 4 points, the Danish, which means that Australia needs to beat Peru and probably beat them by 2 clear goals to go through. I mean, there are a number of permutations depending on that. It's a 4-4 draw between the French and the Danes. That might change everything on goal difference. So what we really need is for the French to beat the Danes and for Australia to win, I would say, 2 clear goals against Peru and then hope that the French and Danish game isn't a goal fest for us to get through. And that's what we... And the thing is, the games are played concurrently, so it's going to be a nervous day if we listen in from Sochi to what's happening between the French and the Danes. Of course, the other factor in all that is that the French have already qualified for the next round. Do they go out and play full bottle? My theory on that is that they haven't been playing in particularly great form, so I think they'll go out and try and play as best as they can. I've been to a lot of World Cups now. I've never seen a team go through a third-round match in the hope that they can just carry their form over into the round 16. So they're looking to build momentum rather than pretending that they can tune up.
Yes, welcome back. 23-7 on Wheel of Fortune. Our carryover champ, Matty Welsh, back on the Friday form, playing for the Holiday to Vanuatu, the Tosca Luggage, the Golf Clubs and the Panasonic Microwave. Please welcome back, Matt Welsh.
How are you, Harf?
Great to have you back, carryover champ.
Yes, good to be back.
Now, you had $100 for those playing at home for the first time, had $100 to spend last week, a virtual 100, doesn't it really exist, and he came back with 132. So that is a profit, which means he's a winter champion, and he gets to continue his run on the Friday form.
And what made it more impressive was, and the government supervisors explained this, that there was a $50 bet that was a scratching.
Correct.
So it was actually an $82 profit.
That is correct. I forgot about the 50-bucks
scratching. So this was very impressive because he actually did more than just double the money. So especially that guy over there, that government supervisor, was very impressive.
He's been looking at me funny, that fella. Yeah. I don't know about him. Not sure I want him in the studio.
So you come back.
Speaking of funny-looking fellas, Nick Quinn's with us from the tab. Good morning, Quinny.
I was about to praise you for that magnificent intro there. You've undone your good work.
Speaking of undone their good work, we had a relationship about caffeine, and that hasn't been followed through, which is slightly disappointing.
Andrew Hughes, who is producing our show this week. Greg Norman's mate.
Yeah.
He actually said, I hear you talk about the coffee all the time. Doesn't that happen? Do you just make that up?
clearly we do it. The usually comes,
oh, he's had a good run, so he hasn't been required
When Trent deputises for Quinny.
Large coffees.
Buckets worth of beverages and danishes and pastries. You don't bring in anything.
Who's just banging the microphone there? That was a subtle way to move on.
I don't understand the springs. I'm not quite sure how they work. Anyway, it's not important right now because we need to have a look at the Flemington card tomorrow. And for those playing for the first time, what we do here on the Friday form is have a bit of a look at the quaddy legs, give you some numbers to play with to narrow your focus for the big day of racing in Victorian racing the following day on Saturday. And we're at headquarters tomorrow, team. So let's get to that. And race one... of the quaddy is at race number 6. The first look at the quaddy is a race number 6 over the mile for the 3-year-olds, Matty Welsh. And we've got, I don't even know how to pronounce this, Guloy for James Cummings, who's favourite at the top weight. So carrying the 60 kegs, $4.80 at tab.com.au. But there's some winning form down the bottom half of this field. What are we going to do?
It's a very, very tricky start to the quaddy half. The widest leg. I've taken 7 horses here.
Seven? This is outstanding.
Yeah, don't worry. We're going to trim it down a little bit later, hoping for a little bit of value early. But I quite like number 14, Skelton, trained by Matty Kamani. Just had the 2 starts. He won by 5.5 lengths on debut at Donald. And then took on the older horses last start at Ballarat. He led them up, went hard in the middle stages, and was just left a sitting shot for something coming over the top. Stevie Basta rides on Saturday, and very few jockeys in Victoria ride front runners as well as Stevie. So I thought at each way odds, number 14, Skelton, was hard to beat. Quinny, what price?
Have you had a bet yet, Matthew?
Oh, look, there's been a little bit of support.
Are you suggesting there has been support?
I am indeed. 14 into 950, and one of the roughies that has been well back throughout the course of the program.
That's so, more than just the $100 sort of fake betting money that we play with.
Hopefully our virtual money got on early. Can we do that with our virtual money? Can we get back at the start? Government supervisor, looking at me funny still?
We're just checking. They're going through their notes.
Right,
so there's conversations.
So we'll
going
get back
on
to our government supervisor. They're not quite sure about this, but number 14 is our early sort of tip for the first leg. Skelton, what else you got that might cause a bit of havoc here?
Yeah, Ready? As I said, we need to go wide half. I think number 4, Lady of Crabilly, gets an inside gate today. Drew wide last start. She was forced to go back and hit the line really well there. So I think she is right in the mix. Number 9, would have thought so. Huge odds. Very good at this track. 2 back behind Iconoclasm. And then was hard up against the rails at Moonee Valley last start, and that was just an absolute quicksand there. So certainly forgiving, would have thought so. Goes in at a big price. The topper you mentioned, Goolwa, good win last start. Got to carry the big weight and the wide barrier on Saturday. Buckhound for Danny O'Brien gets the blinkers on. Certainly a chance. Aroa Tamana was good at Sandown first up, and I think this horse is going to be everyone's new favourite horse if it wins on Saturday. Number 12, Flogger, is the other one we'll be putting in the quaddie off a very, very good debut win. If they go mad up front, it'll be finishing off hard. So wide leg of the quaddie to start, but I think Skelton's a good each way bet at around those double figure prices that Quinny's going to give you at the tab.
When I was a kid, all I wanted to do was be a flogger.
Well, you've mission accomplished. Oh, sorry.
The Fitzroy Cheers Club.
Do you remember all those horses, Quinny, to go through the odds?
For the numbers, yeah. Well, there has been a bit of support for Flogger, which did make me have a chuckle. Twitter absolutely melted when this runner won the other day, 34 into 23. And one that you didn't mention that I'd like to ask you about is Limekilns, who won really well at Bendigo 2 starts ago and wasn't far away at Moonee Valley last start behind Goolwa. Do you anticipate could be in the hunt again at odds?
Yeah, certainly could be in the mix, Quinny. Very good win at Bendigo, as you say, in fast time. And look, hit the line okay at Moonee Valley. Probably would have liked to have seen it do a touch more late, but it's a very wide leg of the quaddie. And if you're going to take field one leg, this would certainly be the one leg to do so, because I think we can trim it down for the rest of the last three legs.
So you're going to take 2 quaddies today? You're going to spend 100
You asked me to do this last night, and I have prepared that, Quinny, yes. So we're taking 7 in each of them because we need to get through the first leg.
Can you read them out again for those playing at home and Adam Remenaskis writing them down?
I've got them, mate. I listen, well, unlike you, Quinny.
Hang on, you might have got them, but our listeners might not have. So perhaps maybe we just go through the numbers once more time.
14, 4, 9, 1, 7, 10, and number 12, Flogger.
Righty, there are your numbers for the first leg of the quaddie. Let's get to the second leg. Over the 1,400 metres, we've got 14 going around at the top of the weights. And the number one saddlecloth with DK Weir as the trainer, wouldn't be surprised to see that as favourite, is Aussie Choice, Matty Welsh, at $2.40 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, looks one of the best bets on the card half. Only has to repeat his last effort. He'll be beating these. It was just an outstanding win at this track and distance. He ran the second fastest 1,400 metre time in history at Flemington.
In history? History.
I think the only niggle that I have with this horse is the track's currently a soft 5. He wants to run fast time. He wants a fast run race. So I'd expect it to be in that good range come tomorrow. We've got nice drying weather today. But yeah, that is the only slight niggle, is if there's a bit of sting out of the track, then that might slow him up a little bit. But if he repeats his last effort, he'll be winning. I'll be taking him one out in one of my quaddies. I think the main dangers, if there are any, potentially Arkham Knight over from South Australia, was a brilliant winner at Warrnambool in fast time during the carnival. Stepped up to 1,600 metres in the Lee Stakes, didn't really run that out. And then dropping back to 1,250 last start, if you could see how far this horse was off the leader on the home turn, you would have thought it was 1,000 to 1 in the run, and managed to get the job done on the line. I think 1,400 metres, back up to 1,400 metres suits this horse. So probably the main danger. Number 13, Galaxy Raider, got back off a slow tempo last start at Sandown and ran the best late sectionals of the entire meeting. he'll be suited by a stronger tempo here. He's in the mix. And the other one who comes through the same race as the favourite Aussie choice, Miss Gunpowder, gets a soft run, was okay, but hard to see her turning the tables on Aussie choice. So I'll be taking one quaddie with Aussie choice number one, one out, and going wider, 1, 12, 13, and 8.
Market, thanks, Nick.
Aussie choice dominates the market at 240. Morton's Fork is 750. Second leg, Galaxy Raider at 8. There has been specking for number 2, Chamoy Road, who's been $10 into 8. A terrific horse who rarely runs a bad race, but has struggled to win in town in Melbourne. Has never done so. The 4 wins in Victoria, 2 at Mildura, 1 at Seymour, 1 at Ballarat. Is always around the mark, but just doesn't seem to be able to crack the win.
Love that research, Quinny, because my notes on it were 5 starts of the track without a win. Also, awkwardly drawn, I felt as well, out in 13, is a horse who likes to just get that soft run right behind the speed or sort of on speed. And I just think from 13, that's going to be a pretty tricky task with a few of these kicking up.
All right, that's the second leg. 1, 12, 13, 8 in numbers. Unless you want to go very skinny, just take the 1, says Matty Walsh, the carryover chap. The third leg is back over the mile again. A benchmark 90 affair. And we've got 14 going around as well. And you wouldn't believe it, DK, we're in D. Yendall. The combination for the favourite. You've got to go down to number 9 to find it. Silence.
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
I did. Silence. Because it's a Z at the end. I just wanted to emphasise the Z at the end.
I thought of you the other night watching the soccer with Lucy Zellick training with the Colombia every time they went around. And geez, I thought you'd be loving that role.
Yeah, I would love that role. It'd be great fun. But what are we thinking here? Third leg, Matty Walsh?
Quinny, what price number 5?
Oh, asking questions early.
Oh, I like this. $19 Bling Dynasty.
Oh, hang on.
I think he's got a super chance first up for the Paul Pruska yard.
Look at those government supervisors.
They're reach for their phones.
Beavering away.
First up, last campaign, this horse went to Mount Gambier over 1,250 metres and just failed by a nose. Then came to Flemington this day last year and was very good over 1,400 metres, only beaten a tick over 2 lengths by Kenny Essent, who, of course, is a very handy galloper. And this year he turns up on this day first up at a mile, which is right in his wheelhouse. And look, we haven't seen a trial, but if he's going anywhere near his best, I think he can be in the finish at a big price. Number 5, Bling Dynasty. Number 6, Guizzo. Guizzo and the favourite Silence both come through the Swan Hill Cup. Guizzo should have won at this track and trip 2 starts ago behind Eclair Calling. Was ahead of Silence in the Swan Hill Cup, and I thought closer to the inside, which wasn't the place to be. He's the main danger, including Silence. 3 very good wins on the trot before going to Swan Hill. Reportedly failed to handle the heavy track, so no doubt going to be better on top of the ground on Saturday. Does need speed on. Likes to come from the tail of the field, can reel off some big late sectionals. The other one I'll be including is number 4, Penske, who's down from Sydney. Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott trained runner, going to be up on speed and in the race a long way. So, look, Bling Dynasty was a big price there at around that $19. Number 5 ahead of 6, Guizzo, 9, Silence, and 4, Penske.
With number 4, Penske has won 2 of his last 3 starts. How hard is it to assess that Sydney form going to a race like this?
Yeah, it's just moderate form. This is a special condition race for horses that have just had a start at the provincials in the last 12 months. Then we see Darren Weir and struggling stables like Darren Weir and Gay Waterhouse with the favourites in the provincial race. But, yeah, look, this isn't a high-quality race, Quinny. That sort of form coming down from Sydney and coupled with a pretty soft speed map should ensure that Penske is reasonably competitive. And again, Stevie Bassett takes the ride. And as I said earlier, he's a very good rider of front runners.
Like it a lot. There you go. 5 from a 6.94 in the third leg, which leaves us with only one more to go over the 1,100 down the famous straight at Flemington. And we've got a full field with the scratching of number 10, Machine Gun Jubs. A great name for whatever reason. Saxophone comes into the field. So we've got 16 going around, and you've been had is the favourite, number 15, at $4 with D. Oliver in the saddle.
It's one of my favourite horses, half you've been had. He's won 4 of 6. The only times he's been beaten has been both at Moonee Valley. Last start, he was heavily backed. He was $5 into about $2.80 on race day there, over the 1,000 metres, and drifted back early, which isn't his normal go to get as far back as he did. He reeled off the best last 800 and 600 splits of the day. I've been waiting for this horse to get to a straight track because you just watch the way he explodes once he straightens up, particularly at Cranbourne and also at Mornington. So this horse will go really well down the straight. I think he's the horse to beat. The main danger is a Darren Weir acquisition in Man From Uncle. Has jumped out really well at Ballarat. He was last seen in the Darley Classic at Group 1 level down the straight, and albeit he was beaten a long way, he's a class horse. He's a Group 2 winner as a three-year-old. I think he's going well for the Weir stable. So he's the main danger, number 7, Man From Uncle. The other two I'll be including in a wider quaddie are Rocket Tommy, who ran a very fast time in winning down the straight a couple of weeks ago at Flemington. Clearly back in good order for the Gwenda Johnston yard. And also number 1 Ability, who, look, at his best, he'd be right in the mix. He had some mucus first up when down the straight. And look, forgiving that, if he can improve second up, he's probably right in the mix, Ability number 1. But I think at 15 and 7, You've Been Had and Man From Uncle dominate the race ahead of 5 Rocket Tommy and 1 Ability.
Quinny, any mucus at the moment?
You've Been Had hits the market at $4. Man From Uncle on the second line of betting at 5. And Ability's a fascinating runny because was favoured out to double figure odds last start and ran accordingly. Obviously, there was that explanation given afterwards, but it didn't help punters on the day.
No, it certainly did not. I think I had a little bit on at the $3.20 when markets went up about Ability, so that was just a shocking bet. But he had tried extremely well leading into that first up run, so he certainly got the Ability, pardon the pun, and he's won down the straight. Craig Williams takes over as well, and the last time Craig Williams was on this horse, he won down the straight, so might be a recipe for success.
Second up, 4 attempts, 3 wins and a second. Looks a good way to win the day. Double figure odds if you like a roughie.
Well, probably well drawn out in 16 as well towards the end of the day. I think there's a few showers forecast, and with the rail out 9 metres, they'll probably drift towards that stand side of the track down the straight races, I would have thought.
Concerned that Quinny's tips in the paper for tomorrow don't even include your top selection. He's got 4 chances to have it in there.
He's going to go have more on now.
He probably didn't get down to number 15 on the dartboard.
It's probably right. Quinn, any major moves there?
The best back runner has been the second elect, Man From Uncle, who's firmed in from $5.50 to $5. You've Been Had heads the market at $4. And Rocket Tommy's been a firmer as well, 12 into 8.
So you don't have any of those 3 in your 4. That's slightly concerning.
I've got the winner, though, Ability.
Righto. Let's have a look quickly, because they're the quaddy numbers for Flemington at this stage. Have a play with you. Just before we move on to the $100 virtuals, the Tats Tiara is tomorrow up at Doomben. Is the last group one of the season? Is that one of these? Yeah. What do you got for us, Quinny?
Race 8 on the program. Find the winner. The value will take care of itself. Champagne Cuddles is a longer price favourite in the Tats Tiara than she started in the Stradbroke, which just goes to show how competitive a race it is. She heads the market at $5.50. Prompt Response, a $7 chance. Shillelagh, $9.50. Savannah Amore, $9.50. Supercash, $10. Moss Trip, $10. Invincible Gem, $11. Padrina, $13. Daisy Doom, $14. And there's been a little bit of support for Miss Rock, who's been 21 into 19. Second to Santa Ana Lane last start in the Goodwood.
And Robbie Lang was on with Michael Felgart yesterday, and he was incredibly bullish about Miss Rock's chances. And I also note that Michael has Ben Asghari on today, who will no doubt give the good oil on Padrina, which he owns, and I think has certainly helped shape the campaign. So I'd certainly tune into that.
I'll be doing that. 3:58 local guys tomorrow, the Tats Tiara, the last group one of the season, the time-honoured 3:58 p.m. slot in Saturday racing. Now, Welshie, we've got $100 for you to spend. Last week you did return $182. It's a terrific result for our punters with your virtual 100. What have you got going tomorrow for us?
We'll kick off early. Race 2, number 1, Creativity. 40 the win on her. I think she'll grab control of the race. She should have won last start at Moonee Valley, provided she can either lead or sit outside the leader. She'll be very hard to beat. We're 40 to win the other sort of shorter price favourite of the day that I think will win in race 7, number 1, Aussie Choice. And then the two roughies I mentioned through the quaddy, race 6, number 14, Skelton, $10 the win, and race 8, number 5, Bling Dynasty, $10 the win.
All right, 2-1, 7-1, 6-14, 8. What number was Bling Dynasty?
5.
8-5, $10 as well. They're your numbers for the virtual $100. Government supervisors have ticked that off.
Yeah. Marianne Van Dorsler's really.
Yes.
She doesn't usually bet. She had a bet last week and she bet to a profit. So she's investing again.
She's very, very pleased.
Gavin Woods,
did you Google her name?
Marianne Van Dorsler.
Did you Google that or do you remember?
Or for our Brisbane listeners, Richard Champion does the...
and Rob Bruff.
does the balls these days. Quinny, what have you got for us as the coffee bet, please?
Well, not that it matters who you might exactly. Yeah. We're wasting time.
I don't know how to play this now. Come on, I'll get a little support for the ball.
Marianne's got the pen out.
The highlighter.
There we go.
And you've been given music.
Music's... I'll just go creativity, all up Aussie choice, take the double.
Creativity into Aussie choice. You got any numbers for us? So just
2-1.
2-1.
7-1.
7-1, righto. So what you've done is just had no preparation. You've just taken Matty Walsh's best bets and you've just lumped them in together. He is the AFL Games, a record holder. He's a little champ for the North Heidelberg Bulldogs as well in the Northern Footy League, just dominating proceedings week in and week out. And he's back again in the Friday Footy Preview. Good morning, Boomer.
Good morning, boys. Oh, Friday. I love Fridays.
Why do you love Fridays?
Oh, out of bed early, up at Adam. Football tomorrow, football tonight. Oh, it's great.
How cold is it in Yarrambat up in Adam these days on a Friday?
Oh, it's about 6 or 7 degrees in the city. It'd be about 12 degrees in Yarrambat. It's beautiful out there.
It's always warmer in the bat, isn't it?
Oh, it's about 3 degrees cooler in the bat. Just don't like telling people that.
Did you have the ice on the windscreen this morning?
It's way by a house with a garage. Whitey.
That's a great response. That is a great response.
I haven't had ice on my window for about 22 years, I reckon.
That is an outstanding response. Well played to you, Brent Harvey. Well played. Wish I had a garage. That is one thing.
Haven't got a garage.
No.
Oh, you need a garage.
No, I haven't got one.
You got a garage, Woody?
Yeah, I've got a garage, but there's too much stuff in the garage to put the car in.
So you've probably got indoor cricket or something set up out there, have you?
Yeah, it's a bit like that.
We live in the inner suburbs, don't we, Huff?
That's right.
It's a little bit more difficult.
Difficult.
He lives on about 20 acres. He's got four garages.
Not quite. Or three, not four.
There's a big shed out there somewhere too. Did you watch the game last night, Boom?
Oh, I certainly did. Thursday night footy. Had football training, had selection, and then rush time, watched the football. During the coaches talking the rooms and picking the teams, everything, all the boys are watching the football. Unbelievable. First 8 goals. They just started. I can remember watching yesterday's game versus Geelong. And they just smashed them. And there was no coming back for the Cats. No matter how good they played after quarter time, they were never going to win. That was the same last night for me. West Coast couldn't win after quarter time. It was unbelievable. I know you boys have been talking about it and the entries inside 50, but take those two players out. I reckon list committee at the West Coast Eagles today would be looking through this year's draft and saying who's a forward, because as soon as Kennedy or Darling go, they're going to need another tall forward. And do you think they went last night and thought, we haven't got the two tools, we have to play similar to a Richmond type of forward line? But they just bombed it in, didn't they? There was no structure to it. I still sit here and I'll say the most important kick in football is still the inside 50 kick.
Well, you were the master at that. That was your bread and butter.
Well, you watch it last night, it's damning. The evidence is damning. They just bombed it in. You've got no tools to mark it. You've got to lower your eyes. And the reason why I love Alistair Clarkson so much is because he's got the ability to change a game within a game. Mm-hmm. There's not too many coaches that can do that, and I don't think West Coast tried to do that until three-quarter time. They put McGovern up forward, but the game was done.
Mm. It's true. It's true that there wasn't a lot of change to the structure last night, was there, even though it wasn't going their way, the West Coast Eagles?
I think the other interesting thing that Boomer makes about that kick inside 50, it was something that Essendon did a lot better this week. And, you know, even though they beat Brisbane Rammer in the game before the bye, I know you were over in Mexico at the time, but their forward entries were horrendous and they've been poor all year. But last night they were very, very good. It looked a very different looking Essendon team forward to centre.
There was a couple in particular that caught my eye. One from Fantasia to Stringer in the first quarter where he took on his direct opponent out to the fat side, Stringer led into space, Josh Green over the top. I think that was to Stringer also in the first quarter. So, yeah, their entries were definitely a lot better. Sean McKernan probably didn't have a day that he wanted to, but I thought Mitch Brown was really good last night. He led up at the football quite well. Stringer was dangerous all night, and their smalls were dangerous. So I absolutely agree with Boomer. That's the money kick. Going inside 50 is the absolute money kick because, you know, if you can at least maintain some sort of possession inside your forward 50, you give yourself a chance to kick a goal.
Isn't it amazing? And I know the players will be doing this. They'll be looking at the ladder every 15 minutes thinking it's going to change on a Tuesday when we all know it doesn't. And they'll be going, if only we beat Carlton, if only we beat the Western Bulldogs. You know, there's another two wins. Then all of a sudden their season is still alive. Mate, if they can play like that, That's unbelievable football. And the greatest thing about last night for me was their run. McKenna off halfback. Saad played a great game. Fantasia's back in the team. Tip and Woody. And this is what we've been banging on since the start of the season. If they can deliver that, they just can't deliver that consistently.
No. Ram and I talked about this yesterday, about trusting Essendon. It's very hard to trust them. But when you look at what they've done now over the last month, or it's, what, four or five they've won now, including some teams that are currently inside the top 10 on the ladder. But the thing that I think has improved Essendon, Ram, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, is some of the youngsters. So Langford's now had five games, and he should never have been dropped when he was after round two or three, but he had a career-high 24 disposals last night. Redmond Guelphy. We know of Francis that isn't too far away. There's a few of the younger players, obviously McGrath's a number one pick, but some of their youngsters look okay.
Oh, I agree with that, and I don't think McGrath's having anywhere near the year that he was having last year. He's still a very, very good player, but you know, he was outstanding in his first year. I love Guelphy. He does some hard work. There's a couple of occasions last night when a contested football needed to be won. He just put his head over the football, absorbed the tackle, restart, and you know, off you go again. So I really enjoy what he does. Redmond was on crutches at the end of the game last night, so that was late in the game. He got his ankle caught in a tackle, so he's been good. Jordan Ridley was the other one who's been out injured. He's been good. So you know, they are blooding some young players. The Bombers are for the future, so, and that's without even Darcy Parrish in the team.
Is he injured?
He is now.
Okay, he did get dropped.
He did get dropped. So they're, you know, they were planning on making him earn his spot back, as they did with Langford. You know, Langford played a significant amount of time in the reserves to start the season, but now he and the club are getting the rewards.
I think we thought this was going to happen a little bit earlier and quicker for me, because when all the senior players were banned and all those young players came in, we just thought, wow, this is going to be a big year for us. And imagine when they get all their senior players back, and it didn't gel the way everyone thought it would. So we know they're capable, and the trust word, Whitey, that you use all the time, I just can't trust them, is exactly where they're at right now. But they'll be kicking themselves with a couple of poor losses.
The other significant performance last night was Tom Bell Chambers. I think particularly early in the game, how he was able to neutralise Nat Nui and Lysett. He basically rucks alone. Sean McKernan comes in and does pinch hit, but Bell Chambers, his ability in the centre bounce against Nat Nui, but around the ground, he's marking at the moment. I think he took eight marks last night. He's in career best form, Tommy.
Yeah, he is, and he's symptomatic of Essendon, though.
Yeah, he is. No doubt about that.
When he plays well, Essendon plays well. When he plays poorly, and he can have poor games, Essendon are poorly. But, Half, you know, you were talking about Kennedy and also Darling not playing for West Coast. I think it's important to mention that Joe Danaher wasn't playing for Essendon. Mm. And you can even also throw in a couple of other forwards that weren't there for Essendon last night that they would have had as their initial structure at the start of the year. So that makes it even better for me that Essendon was able to do what it did without one of the best forwards in the competition.
Are we seeing Joe Danaher? You said about 6 weeks ago that he won't play for the rest of the year anyway.
I maintain the only way he will play again is if Essendon are a chance to play finals. Otherwise, I think he'll be... And I don't think Essendon will play finals, and I don't think we'll see him again this year.
Do we know anyone that manages him?
No. Rama doesn't.
No. Nigel Carmody from TLA Worldwide manages him. I don't.
I didn't say you. I said, the question was, do we know someone?
Yeah, we do.
Well, the answer was yes then. Don't give me, I don't do it.
No, that's you said in this room.
Yeah, do we know anyone in this room that knows the manager?
No. That knows the manager.
You're very defensive.
No, honestly, I don't know with Joey if he will be back or not. It was he was obviously very sore, and I read with interest yesterday, in that little period where they played three games in 10 days, when he was really sore, he played 97% game time through that little period. So obviously that was a significant amount of game time, and he was playing in pain. So I do feel for Joey a little bit. He carried it through the preseason. He tried to carry it through the early part of the season. But as we all know, Boomer, when you have those type of injuries and you lose your power and your drive, football becomes very difficult.
It's funny, you know, when you've got an injury to the groin, you think, oh, that's the most important part of my body because I'm changing direction. Then you get a busted finger or a busted hand, you think, that is the most important. I'm handling the ball all the time. Then you do your shoulder and you think, nah, I can't mark. That's the most important thing. So the injuries, they're funny for me. But I don't think Why would they play him 3 games in 10 days?
Exactly.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. John Westfeld did say during the week that Joe Danaher is not back anytime soon. So he did put that on the record during the week, and we've just completed round 14.
It hasn't got a lot of soon left, really, before we get to the end of the season. So if he's not going to play, they've got to find a way to hopefully be finals contenders without him. So what we saw last night, I think your point about Mitch Brown was really, really good. When James Stewart's playing really well, that was the role that he would play.
Yep.
He's not there at the moment.
So those two compete for that spot.
Andrew Bogut, of course, one of our favourites in Australian sport and a former number one draft pick on NBA Draft Day. Good morning, Bogey.
How's it going?
Going all right, buddy. The NBA draft, let's start with that, because I imagine when you get to this time of year with your number one status back in the day, that this brings back some memories. What are your memories of draft day?
I hate the time, actually. You know, it was a very fast-paced, kind of bright lights type atmosphere, and I was kind of just looking forward to just kind of getting selected and getting on with the job kind of thing. I wish I would have enjoyed it more looking back, but as a young fella, it was all foreign and new to me, and you know, anxiety and nerves and all that put together, you just want the whole thing to be over with.
Were you prepared for it? Did they try and give you a little workshop dry run about what to expect?
No, not really. It's all pretty genuine emotion. So, you know, I had no idea where I was going to get picked, who was going to pick me, all that kind of stuff. So, it was all pretty natural.
So we see now the guys, Andrew, they've got all these flash suits. They've got all sorts of things on there. The day is all set up for them. Social media is all set up. Take us through your day. What was your day like as the number one draft pick?
So once I got, you know, obviously you go there a couple of hours before, you get your family there at a table. I had my college coach, agent, mum and dad, and then you sit there and kind of wait, and then they start proceedings. You know, it once live on TV. Thankfully, I heard my name called first, so I didn't have to wait too long. And then they take you straight to the back, and you're doing media from all around the world, including Australia. You're doing probably about 15 different stations of media, and then you do a few more things in the NBA, and then you kind of we had a little after party planned. Booked out a restaurant and had friends and family there, and then the very next morning I was on a plane to Milwaukee.
How proud of a moment was that for you and your family, being obviously a kid from Australia, a kid from Melbourne that you know, played all his local basketball or junior basketball here, then went to the States? Did you have a chance to reflect and spend a bit of time with your mum and dad to reflect on where you come from and where you've got to?
A little bit. Look, that night we did over more than a few drinks. It was. But like I said, once it kind of got rolling post draft, it was then a whole other journey of getting to Milwaukee, finding a place to live, and meeting the GM, meeting the coach, going to the practice facility. So there wasn't a whole lot of time really afterwards to spend with my family, to be quite honest with you. So they flew back to Australia after that, and I went to Milwaukee and spent about a week there just doing the PR stuff and all that. And then we met up in Australia and caught up after that.
What was the pressure like being the number one pick? Obviously it has its advantages, but does it have some disadvantages as well? Or once you get into the system, it's quickly forgotten about?
It's not. Look, I was fortunate that I went to a small market. If I would have went to New York or LA, I doubt I would have handled it as well, because there's a whole lot more scrutiny and pressure and all that. Milwaukee was a bit more of a smoother transition, just because they gave me about, you know, a year or two to kind of adapt to the NBA game and settle in. I was still 19, 20 years old and wasn't as strong as I am now, and was still growing into my body, so it still took me a little while to excel. But once I got going, I thought, okay, but look, there's a bit more of a microscope on you, and that's something you got to deal with even 10 years into your career, if people still, you know, mention it.
What about the difficulty of the kids that are drafted that come from the European teams? There's a kid that's going to be drafted fairly high in Luka Doncic. I think that's how you pronounce his surname. What about the difficulties of those guys changing the style of play? You were fortunate that you got to play college basketball. These guys are coming over from the European leagues. How long does it take them to transition?
Yeah, a little bit. Look, I had to transition myself, NCAA to the NBA. It's a different game itself, and the same thing with Europe. Europe's probably a bit more acclimatized to it, because you're playing against grown men and former NBA players playing in Europe and big physical guys. So
I think he'll be fine. I mean, he's a really good player. I think that the game over in Europe, obviously, and overseas in Australia has gotten better over the last decade. So I think the transitions have been a bit better. But nothing can prepare you for, you know, 82 games a season and 4 games a week and getting to cities at 2 or 3 a.m. That's probably going to be the biggest shock to the system for most international guys.
We are very lucky to have in the studio the best player in the AFLW by a margin in the second season. Emma Carney is her name, formerly of the Western Bulldogs, these days of the North Melbourne Football Club. Good morning, Em.
Morning. How are you, boys?
We're going very well. How are you going?
Yeah, not too bad.
What's your schedule at the moment? Because we know that you're a dual sports superstar. You play with the Melbourne Stars in the Women's Big Bash as well. Cricket's obviously having an off-season, but I'm sure there's a pre-season to some degree. The VFLW is happening at the moment. The AFLW is down the track. What are you doing with yourself at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm currently playing VFL for Melbourne Uni and, just training 2 nights a week, which is a little bit less busy than what it has been in the past. But I'm just about to go away overseas for a little bit of a break and then get back into VFL training.
We've had chats through the year with Ash Brazel, of course, who plays netball for the Magpies, as well as footy for the Magpies, and Jess Duffin, who played with the Renegades in the WBBL and then Collingwood as well in the AFLW. How did you mix the two sports? How hard was it to mix the two sports through last season?
Oh, look, it was challenging at times. You pretty much every night of the week you're training and then you got games on the weekend. So for me, I had to miss probably 8 to 10 pre-season sessions for the Bulldogs. They were pretty accommodating to me. And then while I was away travelling for the Stars, I would mix up some of the trainings. I would, before a match or after a cricket match, I'd do extra running just to make sure that I was conditioned and ready to go, and I'd take my footy on the plane and kick with the S&C staff while we were travelling.
Not down the aisle.
That's what I was just thinking, down the aisle.
Yeah, straight line kicking.
That's how you practice your kicks, Emma.
That's right. That's
a narrow channel.
Square the hips up. So, you obviously win the medal for best player in the AFLW competition last year. It's very, very rare that you see that particular player change clubs in an off-season period. How did all that come about?
I think for me, North Melbourne had a very strong connection to Melbourne University, my VFL team, and I've been playing for Melbourne Uni for 8 years and the link's been there for about 5 to 6 years. So we train out at Arden Street. I'm really familiar with the sort of surroundings and the people that operate there, and they've done a mountain of work for women's footy, I guess, before it became trendy, and that's probably the main reason why I moved there.
When did you know you were going to go to North Melbourne in your mind? I know there's a difference between a signature and knowing. Did you kind of know through the year that it was going to happen?
Yeah, I think as soon as they got a licence, they announced that, I had in my back of my mind that's where I'd like to play my footy. But I guess knowing that I was going to go there, it meant that I could then just focus on playing for the Bulldogs, and that's what I was able to do for that 12 months.
Because it's an interesting test case, isn't it, in a way, because you're the best player in the AFLW. That's proven. You won the award and you're playing for the Western Bulldogs. It didn't affect your football. And we talk often about players that switch clubs, but they keep it private or they don't know and that they can't keep playing good footy. You clearly could.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I made the decision quite early, which meant that I could then focus on just playing for the club that I was playing for at the Bulldogs. And people that know me know that I'm super competitive. So no matter what jumper I'm wearing, I'm going to put in 100%.
Did it feel weird then winning the premiership, winning the best player in the competition as a Bulldog? Did you have not so much second thoughts, but you think, oh, it can't get much better than this? I don't want to sort of affect a winning formula.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Certainly, winning a premiership, it was a sort of a weird feeling because I knew that I was going to be going to North Melbourne at that stage. And, straight away you form that bond with your teammates when you win a premiership. So for me, it was quite an emotional time as well. But I knew that in the long run that the decision to go to North was the right one for me.
So what else will you be doing at North Melbourne? Because I believe you're working there as well at the moment.
Yeah, so they've offered me a job as part of the package, I guess. And so I'm doing sport and rec coordination in the city of Melbourne. So my background is teaching, so great. I've been delivering footy programs within schools in the area and after-school sort of programs for different sort of sports,
so
which is great.
With that and delivering those football programs, how have you felt the young girls of the area have taken to the game?
Women's footy, not only just in this area, but in sort of Australia, has just really grown. And certainly having North now, having a women's team, the schools are more enthusiastic, especially the girls, about women's footy. And, yeah, you only see it get bigger and bigger.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.